Fuck the report from Santillana about Mbappe signing a pre-contract with Madrid, because other French media is saying that he doesn't want Madrid. He wants the Premier League. You know
I'm
who
hearing
signed half the
it.
French national team? We did. You know who has $1 billion? We do. You know who needs a goal scorer? We do. Boys, it's happening. Kylian Mbappe to Chelsea.
Moi champion, Kylian Mbappé, né au vif quand Kylian Mbappé, toi tu aimes bien qui Kylian Mbappé, place nos femmes quand Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, wesh, wesh, Kylian Mbappé. Moi champion, Kylian Mbappé, né au vif quand Kylian Mbappé, toi tu aimes bien qui Kylian Mbappé, place nos femmes quand Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, Kylian Mbappé, wesh, wesh, Kylian Mbappé.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good. Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Flag Stays Down podcast. We are now in 2024. Transfer window is open. Chelsea's undefeated this in a whole year here. Doing great. All right, well, tonight you got me joined by Parker and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Doing good. Been a long weekend. Me and the little man just hanging out pretty much all weekend. My wife was working Saturday and Sunday, 12-hour shifts. So up early, watching footy and just hanging out. So it's been long, but it's been a fun weekend. My flooring is starting to happen in the basement. We had people come over and prep all the floors. And then we had a little snafu with our actual flooring, which was supposed to be installed tomorrow, but is dealing a bit of a setback. So all things considered, things are going well. Can't really complain too much. Parks, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Calendar year 2023 has to be one of the worst in Chelsea history. Like it just was bad. I got to see a couple wins, which is great, but those were few and far between, especially at home. So it's good to kick off 2024 with a win and a little bit of some momentum going into things. It's going to be a interesting kind of upcoming period for the boys. So excited to see how we deal with some lesser talent where historically we've struggled, you know, against teams that play low block and that kind of pack it all in. So it'll be fun. But yeah, life-wise, it's life is good. Saturday was kind of like goal-a-palooza for me, which was cool. I got to see the four goal riot of Preston. And then my older brother was in town. And so we went to the Avs game and caught a 2 o'clock hockey game, and it was 8-4. The Avs ended up losing to Florida, but hell of a game. I mean, it was action-packed. We had great seats and it was really fun. So kind of an action-packed Saturday to kind of highlight the weekend. So nothing really to complain about here, boys. All is good in 2024. Collins, what did you get up to this weekend?
Well, I signed up for the Brew City Half Marathon in April. So I started my training on that this week and all the aches and pains. I know I only took like 3 months off of running, but all the aches and pains are back. So tomorrow's going to be a wonderful work day. But no, like you said, 2023, we had few and far between wins, and we got to see one this weekend after a painful first half. So it's nice when Chelsea doesn't ruin your weekend. I'll take back pain and shin pain and knee pain over a Chelsea loss any day. All right. Well, like I said, we did have a win. It was kind of a tale of two halves, rough first half followed by a four goal onslaught in the second half. So let's just start, as we advance to the next round of the FA Cup here, what are you guys' first reactions from the match?
We finally got an answer to the question, if Enzo scores and it's not televised, did he actually score? So we got that confirmation, which I was very happy to see. I was half expecting VAR to say offsides based on some ridiculous angle that they were using. I don't like those angles because one clearly looks on, the other clearly looks off. So it's very confusing. And depending on which one they use to put the lines against, it's like, well, which one is actually correct? But other than that, I mean, you said it perfectly. It's a tale of two halves. I don't know. It's combination sorry ball and then just absolutely show how good you are and just kick the shit out of a lesser team. Can we do that for a full 90? I would have loved to have seen it. I don't know why we didn't, but I don't know. It's something. It's good to see that we got the win, but it was definitely a very nervy, I would say, 60 minutes of that match.
It was quite the range of emotions for me, because in what kind of a match do you hate how your team is playing and score three headed goals and a free kick goal? Like, it's just... We rarely score headed goals, period. We don't score a lot of set piece goals, period. So two came from set pieces with the Thiago Silva header and then the Raheem Sterling. It's like, this game had kind of everything. And, yes, I wasn't happy with how we played in the first half. It was a boring first half. That was my biggest criticism against the team, was it was a uneventful, uninspired first half. But at the same point, we really weren't in danger. I mean, I went to look up the stats just to see if I was crazy, and Preston's XG for the game was 0.5. It's like, cool. Ours was like 4.3. So clearly the better side, clearly, dominated the match. But I also know that we have the ability to lose those matches. If we go down 1-0, it's a much different energy at the bridge and with the team. Our fans have a way of kind of letting the air deflate from the balloon and not like find a way to like pump up and rally our team. You feel that energy even sitting here in Colorado on TV, right? It's just, you feel that energy kind of let out of the stadium when we concede, and then the groans start to happen, and then the anxious energy kind of comes about as well. And I don't think our team plays particularly well when that happens. So I thought we dealt with the situation relatively well. I was happy to see Thiago come in and off the bench and give that leadership quality to the team that was not missing, but just that added bit. And then I really like how we can move our back four around. It's always been a positive of ours, where guys can kind of play in and out of positions. Even though Levi Colwell hasn't been my favorite player in the past 4 weeks, the fact that he can pivot around, Malo Gusto can play either side, Di Sassi can play right back in a pinch and move to center back when he's more comfortable. So I like how we can then structure our subs around situations like that, which is kind of cool. But overall, we handled our business. We took our chances and scored some pretty sexy goals. The Brea header was nice. The Silva goal was nice. The Sterling, I mean, there were some nice goals in there. So happy with the performance overall.
Yeah, like I said, that's just things. They were some nice goals. But as you guys have both summed up here, that first half, holy shit. I think the only – see, in our group chat, we had a bit of a early man of the match kind of discussion. And it was Alfie Gilchrist, Jordy Petrovic, who hadn't touched the ball, and Caicedo, I think, was the other one. But it was not a good performance from anyone out on the pitch in that first half. But I want to give, I know I'm the waffler on this, but I want to give Pochettino credit, because we praise Thomas Tuchel every single goddamn match of his tenure for this. Play like shit the first half, and we come out inspired in the second half. But just because people want Pochettino out, I don't think it's fair to all of a sudden criticize that. Like, oh, where was this in the first half? You know, why couldn't we just do that? No, he clearly changed something. He motivated in the dressing room, and they went out and dropped four on Preston in the second half. So my first impression was, well done, Poch. But there wasn't controversy, though. And some of it not necessarily warranted, because Armando Broya has to start up front. But the question lingers. And with Pochettino coming out and saying, no, there haven't been any talks on recruitment as of yet with the sporting directors. Can Armando Broya lead that line?
In January, I think so. I mean, if through January, I think he can. Especially if you look at, you know, we've got the two, I think we have the two legs against Middlesbrough in January. Matches that we should win, in matches where if you did have Nicholas Jackson, you would probably expect to see Armando Broya in those games anyways. So I don't see that as a stretch. I think that's perfectly fine. I haven't really looked at our Premier League run of schedules coming up, but I mean, you know, Liverpool, I don't think it would really matter who we put up front, because Liverpool is playing very well right now. I don't think it would matter Nicholas Jackson or Broya. Wolverhampton, Palace, those are all. We just have Middlesbrough, Fulham, and then Liverpool at the end of January. So I'm perfectly fine with Broya leading in January. I don't see any issues with that.
Can he lead the line? Yes, he can go out there and be a body. Do I want him to lead the line? No. I like the goal that he had, but he just doesn't give me enough positives to cheer for as a player. And so he's definitely one that, not really a hot breaking take here, guys, that Chelsea need a striker, but he's just not it. I mean, Jackson, I can see the potential. Jackson, I can see where he's lacking, but where I think he can get better. Broya is just not it for me. So it's an area where I think we need to make some bigger improvements or adapt the way we play. I've been playing around with ideas in my mind of kind of better ways of how we can line up to better suit this team a little bit. But lineups with Broya in it, Collins, I'll steal your thunder. They feel like they're playing with 10 men. At times for good chunks of it, and that's where it just he's just not giving me enough consistency to want to see him out there.
Yeah, and you guys know where I stand on this. I am done with Broya. He can go in this window if it's going to fund signing whoever. That was a great headed goal, but then he missed the exact same one 2 minutes later. And outside of that, I mean, what did he do in that match? He got, as a guy who's supposed to be, you know, for us American fans here, the Jozy Altidore back to goal hold up player, he's getting bodied by mid-table championship defenders. Didn't make any creative runs. Then, so what, you know, and he wasn't exactly poaching, right? There was a couple crosses that came in where Enzo was the only guy in the box. So tell me what positives come from Armando Broya. I don't see any. Now, granted, he has to, Matt, as you mentioned, AFCON with Nicholas Jackson out. We haven't yet brought in a striker, but if we do, they're probably going to need a couple weeks to get up to speed. So yeah, you're probably talking with a replacement end of January. So he has to. It's just it's a good thing we play who we play at this moment, not to look past Middlesbrough or past Fulham. But there are bigger challenges out there. So yes, but no from me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he would be my primary. But the thing with our team is he's almost somebody you can kind of hide just because of how fluid and how like everything runs through our wingers and how we score goals from seemingly everywhere. Like he's again, Parker, like you said, he's just kind of out there, but realistically that's kind of all you need, right? You just need somebody to fill that, at least at this point, until Nicholas Jackson is back. Could you run some other scenarios with other people? Absolutely. But then again, that also leads into, all right, that takes time, making sure that they kind of match. Broya has at least been consistently implemented as that number nine for Chelsea, whether good or bad, he has been implemented in that with different people out on the wings and number 10s and whatnot. So I think it's more of a, I think it would make sense as more of like a comfort thing almost. You know, it's what the team is somewhat familiar with. It's what they've dealt with before. So I think it makes the most sense to stick with that, even though I'm not expecting Broya to put up like 5 goals in the next 3 matches. I'm not expecting that, but I don't think that's necessarily like kind of what he's going to be out there for. I still see the same thing with our creativity coming from the wings and whoever plays the 10. That's where I see all of our goals coming from and whatnot. So I don't really see him as being crucial to our goal scoring prowess.
Yeah. And Parker, to piggyback off what you were saying about tinkering in your head with the lineup, I think you almost have to at this point. You have to get creative with the lineup because, Matt, you don't have to hide Broya. He hides himself on the pitch. And if you think about it, and I think about it in baseball terms with the WAR stat, you know, wins above replacement, Broya is either at replacement level, which is somebody being called up from the reserves to play in the starter level, to play as a starter, or negative, I would say, especially on this run that he's been on recently, except for scoring a goal this week. So you got to put your best win above replacement players out on the pitch, regardless of what position they're in. So, you know, if that means you play a false nine with Raz, like we did at some point earlier in the year, or you have Palmer playing that false nine, throw another midfielder out there, you know, maybe throw Ian Mattson until he goes out on loan out as a wing back and allow Colwill to go central, something. You just got to put your best 11 out there. And if that means no striker, I think that means no striker.
And I think we're scoring goals just fine without a pure striker, which is the interesting part. Now, devil's advocate could say like, okay, if you take that out, you take the big body out, their defenders are going to go other places and it's going to clog up other avenues. Sure, I get it, but it just seems like playing him as like a plug to just tie up central defenders so other people can do their thing just seems a bit of a waste. We expect so much more. Like, our bar is so low at that position right now and he's still not meeting it. Like, we're not asking for a 20 goal scorer in the league. Like, we're not asking for these miraculous things. We're asking for someone who can score like 1 out of every 3 appearances that he has, if that, right? Like, that would be a win, and Broya hasn't been that. So it's just a tough one.
So moving from one goal scorer to another, player who's been dealing with what people have called a sports hernia over the last couple of weeks. And we had noticed previously he hadn't necessarily been looking his best, though he still looked very good, is Enzo Fernandez. He was my, spoiler alert, man of the match in this one. Just, you know, it was dime pass after dime pass. He was chipping those balls over the top. He looked good. But he's also paired up with Caicedo in that midfield. We haven't seen those two healthy, fully healthy, I guess you could say, in a couple weeks, a couple months probably, if he was dealing with a hernia. Now, granted, this is against championship side, but what do you guys think of that Enzo and Caicedo pairing in the middle?
It still needs time. I think put up this combination against one of the big boy teams in the Premier League, and then let's see how we do. It's tough, I think, to gauge against a Preston. Because, again, you could say Jordi Petrovic was best keeper in the world, right? He didn't have to do much. His stats show everything, right? That 1,000 save percentage, like whatever. You also have to look at the competition. So I think when you have $200+ million in the midfield against a championship team whose total salary was like £42 million, something like that. They're going to look outstanding. They're going to look amazing. I don't read anything into it. I enjoy it, but I want to see it actually against somebody that rivals us as far as a quality standpoint.
It's my preferred lineup today, so I enjoyed it as well. I think that's the partnership that's gonna best unlock our team, where Caicedo is more of the enforcer or defensive kind of holding mid, and Enzo's more of your creative distributor. But they both kind of interchange it at times, depending on where the ball is and where, you know, situationally what happens. So, yeah, I think of them as sort of our comfort blankets. But it, to your point, Matt, it needs time. I agree. I think it's going to be the future of our team. Like, I think in a big way that's where a lot of our creativity is going to stem from. And, you know, you saw glimpses of it, that when we are able to turn the ball over and win in the midfield, just how explosive we can be. That's what I'm most looking forward to, is just, finding ways to win in the middle, because I think the matches that we lose or we draw, we tend to lose that battle. And then if we lose that battle, we're just not able to create as many chances. The chances that we create are like the slow, boring build-up chances that everyone sees coming, doesn't really go anywhere. So, you know, we've been most dynamic on the counter or in that transitional period. And a lot of it comes from, especially Enzo, playing those balls over the top. So I like the partnership a lot. I think you might want to tweak it here and there for a matchup dependent. If you do need to be like more solidly defensive or more concrete defensive, you might want to sub that out. But at the time, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm right with you that this is my preferred midfield three with how the roster is constructed right now. And here's the reason I like it, is that, you know, people talk a lot about passing triangles. This was almost more of a, not a running triangle. They're almost doing a weave kind of thing. Caicedo, Enzo, Cole Palmer. You know, Caicedo would maraud forward. Palmer would come back and then grab the ball and distribute from there. Enzo would go forward. Caicedo would shift back, cover the back line. At times you saw Enzo and Palmer both forward with Caicedo covering and distributing from the back. It's exactly like I said, you know, in terms of strikers and when Kai Havertz was around, you want to throw different looks at other teams, and having a three that can rotate like that and work kind of fluidly like that gives that look. And I think a lot of that is dependent on, or not dependent, but a lot of it results in Enzo having a game like this, where he can distribute from deep. He can be the only guy in the box on a cross. He can be lurking at the top of the box. He can be left. He can be right. Not to throw Conor Gallagher under the bus, but when Conor Gallagher is in there, he's kind of just Mr. Chaos Ball up around the top of the box, you know, trying to do the N'Golo Kanté, get the ball back right away so we can build from there. And so you've just got Caicedo and Enzo having to sit back because there's so much chaos out in front. So yeah, I'm all for this front three. I think it's what ultimately quote unquote unlocks Enzo Fernández.
Kind of an unfair jab at Gallagher, though. I'll say that. Because okay. I think that if Connor's pushing forward, then the other two shift back. That fits into what you just said, right? Like, because there are times when Cole Palmer busts forward and goes for it. He's not as chaotic as Connor is, I'll give you that. But there are times when he goes forward and then the other guys cover their back, right? And so knowing that, sure, like maybe Connor needs to be a bit more calculated on when he goes and when he stays. Sure, but I think he does win that ball back a good amount of the time, which does help our team as well. So,
all right. So last thing from the match, something that sparked quite the debate on the old Twitter machine. Simon Phillips, writer for Talk Chelsea, tweeted that Alfie Gilchrist is better than Axel de Sasi. One starts because he's £40 million signing, and the other one is only getting a sniff because he's free. There are people entering the race card into that. There are people entering the English versus non-English, Cobham versus non-Cobham. But am I the only one thinking rationally about this, where Alfie Gilchrist is not better than Axel de Sasi? It's too small of a sample size.
With a name like Alfie, you have to be able to back it up, and damn it, he did. Like, we were talking about it, Collins, you brought it up earlier. Like, we thought he was arguably man of the match, like, easily within the first half, and it wasn't even close. We're just like, yeah, that's Alfie all day. He's that John Terry-esque, like, no bullshit type defender. I don't know if he's going to bang his teammate's wife, but he's just that no nonsense type of defender, and I love it. But like, that's what the team has been needing for a while, ever since Rudiger left. I like it. I think he has a lot of potential. I'm glad to see that he's getting a chance, especially with the back line as depleted as we are right now. You know, for him to be able to come in, even for the short stints that he had over the last few weeks, like the Palace game, just coming in like a house of fire. It was great to see. Like, he is somebody who is excited to be out there, wants to play, wants to make an impact. I love seeing it. And he slotted in at right back for the Preston game, and I thought he looked good. He was even trying to make some overlap runs and things like that. So I enjoyed what I saw out of him. Is he better than de Sasi? I don't think so. I think maybe in some aspects, one of those being like with de Sasi, sometimes whether or not he decides to take a ball or not, I think is sometimes a little bit questionable. We've kind of seen that play out throughout the season so far. But that's, at that point, that's kind of nitpicky. He's been solid for us defensively. So I don't really have any issues. And he's trying to be kind of that life force, that Rudiger-esque type player, you know, trying to be that leader, you know, that support system for damn near the entire club. So I don't agree that Alfie is better than de Sasi, but I do like what I'm seeing out of Alfie in the limited time that I've been able to see him. I thought he had a good performance in his debut.
See, I think de Sasi catches a bad rap among a lot of Chelsea fans. A lot of the ones who are very pro Cobham, pro youth, you know, promote from within. We want Chelsea boys through and through, kind of thing. And it's because of the price tag, it's because of the age, it's because of where he came from. You know, think about who else we've signed from Monaco. There's Badiashile, which has been okay. And Bakayoko. So you've got kind of hit or miss. I think people are already nervous when you mention, oh yeah, we're signing somebody from Monaco, unless it's Kylian Mbappe. Then you look at the price tag, 40 million pounds for a 25-year-old who has played his whole career in France. Seems probably high to begin with, but it's something that gets the deal done. And then people look to Cobham and they're like, oh, well, we have center backs in Cobham. You know, Levi Colwill, Trev Chaloba, Delphi Gilchrist. You know, we have lots. Why would you go out and spend? I think people are just looking for a reason to be mad at ownership. And so, you know, when Axel doesn't have the best game, he's going to be the scapegoat. Now, I will say that he has played in a World Cup final. He captained Monaco for 2 years. He's got several hundred first division appearances. Alfie Gilchrist has played a total of 70 minutes, I would say. But Matt's signaling something down there.
What? Yeah, three appearances.
Yeah.
So far that I count.
Three appearances, 7 minutes against Palace, 50 minutes in this one, you know, somewhere in there. But how can you, I don't understand how you can make that statement. It boggles my mind. That very much comes off to me as, you know, English over anything kind of guy.
And the race card, right? That probably does play in some people's minds that, let's be honest, just don't want to see that, right? So the only thing Alfie is better at than Axel Disasi today is maybe right back, but Disasi is not a right back. So fine. He might be a better striker than him too. I don't really care. What I've seen out of Disasi has been great. It's been consistent and it's been reliable. Body of Shield has not been as reliable and has had some injury and stuff, but Disasi and Silva have been our stability plays this year. They've been our anchors at the back. We don't have the best defense in the league, but we don't have the worst defense in the league either. So I think Disasi deserves a lot of credit on where the team is and, you know, sort of building from it. It's silly that someone can look at a 20-year-old that has, you know, two recent appearances and say he's better than Disasi. It's just silly. Collins, the most measured thing you've said in the past, you know, 48 hours was, I like Alfie, but I don't want to go overboard with his potential yet. You know, I've been burned on this before with people that I get excited about, and time will tell exactly where, you know, how things play out and where they end up being. Is he exciting as a 20-year-old? Absolutely. We have a lot of exciting young, you know, between 18 and 22-year-old players. We've got a ton of them. He's one of them, and that's fine, but I'm going to wait and temper my expectations until I see a consistent run of form, like I will with anyone else. I mean, Enzo, Caicedo, Cole Palmer, like all of those guys have done it now for at least a season, right? Or at least part of a season. So we're allowed to talk about them in certain high regards because they continue to put in performance after performance, starting games, finishing games. Their minutes are accruing up. Those comments, I feel like, are to drive comments back on Twitter, right? Because you get advertisers look at how much interaction your posts get, and congrats, you did it, right? You got us talking about it. So I guess he wins in his post, but they're backed by almost nothing. So if I'm putting together a team today, unfortunately, Alfie Gilchrist isn't making the cut in my best 11. Sorry.
Collins, I like that you brought that up in the chat, that you've been burned on this before. I'm here for it. I have my Alfie kit coming in the mail. I am all on board. I was on board with Lewis Hall. I have a Billy G kit. I am all in favor. I will get my hopes up for everybody.
Alfie to Brighton this summer confirmed. No, I did just want to put a little bit of context on there, and Simon Phillips is the same guy who, you know, came out after Lampard was fired saying Antonio Rudiger should be sold immediately for being a locker room cancer. It doesn't seem to be the best judge on center backs, I will say. All right. Well, turning to something outside the match, and that is the transfer window, as I mentioned, opened on January 1st. Will be open through the end of the month. It's been kind of slow already for Chelsea. Pochettino asked about it. First of all, asked about Jordan Henderson, which was odd. And then also asked, you know, if there's been any developments. No meetings as of match day. So any rumors, anything that you guys are seeing that would excite you, incoming or outgoing?
I just, for my own sanity, I just want Trev gone. Is that too much to ask? I feel like he's been just kind of waiting in limbo for like a year and a half. Can we just be done with it? It's really the only thing I truly want out of this. Like, can we just be done?
Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case, because I think he's still hurt. And I don't know anyone that's going to buy him hurt. So I
send him on loan with option to buy or obligation to buy.
Yeah.
What about Malang Sarr? He's still in that boat too.
Yeah, I don't phrase this one correctly. I don't think he's come back from loan.
Yeah, it's incredible that we cleared off a lot of deadwood over the past 12 months, and it's amazing that we still have some pieces left on the books.
I love that Sarr is technically on the roster, but wasn't assigned a number.
Right, exactly. That should tell you everything. You know, it's funny. I have a sort of a different opinion, Collins. I'm actually really glad that there's not a lot of rumors going on right now. I prefer closed door business than out in the press business. And I think out in the press drives up transfer fees. And I think it gets a lot of media involved and it gets a lot of eyeballs on it. And I prefer to kind of move in the dark on these ones. And so the fact that we haven't been linked to as many people kind of excites me, because I want more Cole Palmer situations. Because nobody knew Cole Palmer was signing with Chelsea. And like, there was a couple people who knew some things and they were like, I got a tidbit and you guys are going to freak out when you find out about it. Like some of those stories. And it wasn't, you know, his name wasn't brought up until the papers were signed. So I'm all for that. And if I'm going to name a name, I'm going to name the name I've named the last, I think, 4 weeks straight, which is Alphonso Davies. Bring him in.
A lot of shouts for Alphonso Davies. But, you know, just to kind of wrap up rumors, you know, there was the rumor of Trev going to Bayern, and then Bayern went out and got Eric Dier from Tottenham instead. So, yeah, Trev and Malang might just be hanging out at Cobham the rest of the year. Conor Gallagher, those rumors will not go away. Him going to Tottenham, we'll see if that happens or not. Pochettino still very happy with him. And you've got several people we're apparently looking at in Portugal: Antonio Silva, Ousmane Diomade, Victor Gyorkis. There are two or three other ones in there as well from Portugal. But yeah, no, it's after last January and this summer, this has been a very odd first week of the transfer window. And Parker, I'm glad that you're enjoying it. For me, it's making scrolling Twitter a little more boring. So I'm just going to stick with Kylian Mbappe is not going to Real Madrid. There's the report that he wanted to go to the Premier League. Again, I think we got that all lined up. I think the it's written in the stars, Mbappe to Chelsea. So whether that's this month or summer, we'll have to see. We might not find out until September, right? If we don't know until he signs the papers.
One, I didn't say I was enjoying this. I said I prefer doing business like that. There's a difference. I too would like more news, especially because we have areas of improvement. But the one thing that did come out, I think since the last time we podcasted, I don't remember the exact date, but does deserve mentioning that we did recall a loan with Andre Santos. That's a signing. That's a, you know, that's a piece in the door where he's now a part of our team and that we can now deploy him at, you know, on match day. I think that's big news. And I don't think a lot of people are talking about that or what that impact could be. Right. And he's a dynamic young player that got very few appearances on his loan and now has the ability to come in, especially in this January window where we've got some lesser opponents and a tighter schedule where I think we've got five, six matches in the month. So bring him in, see what the kid can do. I'm excited about it. He was one that was on the fringe. We were all talking about of, do you keep him? Do you loan him in the season? And so now that we've got him back, see what the kid can do.
And in addition to him, Dr. Fofana also recalled. It sounds like he's going to Sevilla, but let's talk about Andre Santos real quick. So per FIFA rules, he can't go on he can go on another loan, but it has to be domestic. So it has to be within England. Does he go out on loan? Does he stay with the team? Where do you guys think he fits in as, you know, as we go through January here?
I think he goes on loan. I just with how our midfield is, I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens with Connor. If Connor stays, and with, I know Lavia is like re-injured again, or he's out again, something. Like he's supposed to be kind of that other piece. And if he's out just for a very limited time, and he's coming back, and then you have Santos, I don't see a place for him in the squad. So I think for game time, I think he'd be better suited to go like to the championship, and, you know, tear shit up there. Like, you know, we've seen with Casete, like I think I was watching highlights of the Leicester match yesterday, and he had a goal and assist. So like he's doing stuff down there. Have Andre Santos go down there, have him run for 6 months, do what he needs to, help aside, and then bring him back in summer. I don't think there's going to be a ton of value in trying to bring him in essentially this late. I know it's an ongoing project, but try to bring him in kind of this late into the season if we're, you know, essentially not playing for much, and most of what we're going to be playing for is going to be decided, you know, in January anyways. I think you just send him out on loan down to a team in the championship and just see what he can do from there, because he really didn't get a shot at Nottingham Forest, so we don't really know if a Premier League team would fit him, so to speak. We know he's got talent, but can he get into the side and things like that? With what we've seen from other loan spells to other Premier League teams, it hasn't always worked out so well. Billy G comes to mind. Andre Santos, I think we're seeing this more and more. So I think a championship team would be the best option for him.
And Felix Johnston, beat writer for Chelsea, did come out and say that the club is not looking to send him to the championship. There are several teams, including Leicester, who want him. But the two kind of headlining Premier League teams were Palace and Sheffield United. I don't know.
I could see that. I could see, you know, a lower to mid level team. That, and Forest, I didn't like from the beginning because they're such a hodgepodge of just misfits from all different other teams. Like, what was it last year? They signed like 27 new players or something ridiculous. There was never a good shot for him. I don't think it was good to send him there.
But you have to also make sure that the team that you're sending him to will play him, or that he has a chance to play. I think that's something that we have to be a little bit more sure of when we're actually making these deals and talking with these teams.
Yeah, it's like in FIFA when you get to say, when you offer to buy a player, you get to say what their role on the team is, right? And he's got to be like starter or close to it, right? Like guaranteed starting spot. Otherwise, I think we keep him. When I mentioned that, you know, I think we should float around ideas for lineup. I think a 4-3-3 where we play three midfielders, a system like that could fit him better and fit our team better, where we don't have like a lone set striker up top, and then we are able to kind of work wider. And then when we're full strength, if we play with wing backs, I think that could work as well, but we're not at full strength, so I won't bring that up. But yeah, I think there's ways to get them in the team. But again, we do need to kind of get more creative with our lineup, and in the lineup that we have, there's not a ton of spot for them.
So yeah. And I think he does spend the rest of the season with us. First of all, we're going to have injury problems the rest of the damn year, apparently. But second of all, you got to remember his international commitments too. With it being an Olympic year, he leaves tomorrow to go join the Brazilian national team for Conan Ball's pre-Olympic tournament that runs through, I think, the middle of February. So if he goes on loan, he's going to play in that tournament in South America, come back, not be able to join and train with the team he's loaned to, you know, again, until mid-February, if he might be given a week off in between to recover. So you're looking at March, and then you're looking at 2.5 months of, you know, figuring out that new system, figuring out teammates, all that. I don't see that as being beneficial, especially when the major teams linked in this deal are relegation teams. You're not going to take a chance on an 18-year-old who just joined 2 months ago. You're going to go with your seasoned guys that you've been going with and play it safe. So, and then you add on top of that he's going to miss all preseason because he's going to be playing in the Olympics. So really his only chance to impress, to get a first team spot for next year, is going to be between February and May with this team. I think he fills in where Big Les is right now. I think he's that kind of killer off the bench, guy who can go box to box, a guy who could fill in for Connor Gallagher when he's tired, right? 70th minute after Connor's been sprinting all game, Andre Santos does the same thing. Go let him do that.
I like that.
One other thing, just because I didn't make myself clear when you guys were talking about transfers. I'm in favor of it being kind of a dead period right now, because it is way too difficult to try and keep up with all the people that we were linked to over summer. It was way too difficult. So the fact that we don't have a lot of news makes it very easy on me. So I'm a big fan of that.
All right. Well, boys, let's close out like we always do with our polls. So again, 4-0 victory. Let's start with the man of the match. We've got four options here and we do have one right in. So we'll say five. Got Enzo Fernandez, Alfie Gilchrist, Mal Augusto, Raheem Sterling, Thiago Silva. Where are you guys going?
For me, it was Enzo. Talked about it a lot. Pulled the strings, made stuff happen. Overall, back to Enzo quality. And you love to see it.
I'll give him love. I'll give it to Alfie. He made his first start. You got to be happy for the kid, and he played well. So I'll give it to Alfie for that. Everybody else played extremely well, but just a little nod for the first start.
Yep, I'm with Parker. I'm Team Enzo. Just watching some of the passes he had were why I originally said I would go gay for Enzo. Like that's back. So, but this one was kind of a shocker, And we had a pretty substantial amount of votes in this poll too. Malo Gusto running away with it with 63%. Enzo in second with 16, Raheem Sterling with 12, and Alfie with 8. Thiago Silva was our write-in.
You know, Malo Gusto doesn't get enough credit, but he has definitely come in and been a big impact to this team. He really has.
And he's been consistently good on both sides of the pitch. Well, at every side of the pitch, seemingly, nowadays. He has just been, like, the definition of consistent, which is just a huge asset that Collins, I know you've been a fan of him, but I don't even think you saw this coming, how well he was going to be able to do on both the right and now seemingly the left. And just his ability to adapt and fill in that role, he's definitely been an absolute steal.
Yeah, Ed, what do we get him for? $25 million, something like that. No, he's been our best defending wingback since he's joined the team. Very, very reliable. So, yeah, props to him on his first man of the match win for the Flag Stays Down podcast. Then our negatives, we got to do our negatives. Not as many votes on this one following a 4-0 win. But, man, they get the fuck out of here. We had the first half. We had lack of energy. We had Preston fans and their homophobic chants. Or we had other where no one commented, but I have one, and it's Armando Broya. So there's my man to get the fuck out of here. Parker, who you got?
I mean, the lack of energy, yeah, but it was just the first half. I mean, yeah, the first half was just not great. And we need to be able to at least, like, I don't mind, like, that we don't play at the highest level for 90 full minutes, but we have to be able to still, like, create some opportunity in that first half. Because there will be teams that punish us. There have been teams that have punished us if we can't get that first goal. And that first goal is super crucial for this team. So it just worries me for the future of the team, like, looking forward to other games, that if we play like that, we'll get punished for it. So that can get the fuck out of here for me.
I have a couple right ends. Craig Burnley. ESPN FC in general. And Colin DeSager for Armando Broya. Those are my three. But honestly, for me though, it's ESPN FC. So bad. Like, just everything about it is so bad. When they put out the lineups, like, when they shared the lineups multiple times, and it had Alfie as the right center back, Malo Gusto as the right back, Levi Colwell as, like, the left back. I'm like, and then I look out on the pitch, I'm like, what the hell? Like, did somebody just guess? And if they did, they did a terrible job. And the other one was Pochettino not knowing who Alfie Gilchrist was when he was asked in his pregame interview. That was tough to watch. Asked directly about him, and Pochettino's like, who? Alfie, Gilchrist, who? And then one of his assistant coaches says, Gilchrist. It's like, what? I'm like, come on, dude. Like, work with us here. But yeah, for me, ESPN FC, they fucking suck.
Craig Burley is a piece of shit. Yeah. I'll just say that. Yeah, I know he's got history.
Who's the other Scottish guy?
He is Steve Nicol.
Yes. Those two together, awful. Just awful. All they do is talk shit, and they just ramble. Can't deal with it. They suck. And their host, whatever host they have, is also trash. So ESPN FC, fuck out of here.
The one saving grace ESPN FC has is they have Ian Dark for La Liga. But he is one of the GOATs I wish they would put him on FA Cup coverage, but it is what it is.
They did for one of the games, I think. I think one of the early Saturday morning games, he was on.
We recently had him.
Yeah, I forgot
when we were on Peacock, so he must have been a Sky.
Yeah, I forgot which game it was. I was watching it, but I don't remember what game it was.
All right, well, the winner of that poll was the first half with 88%. Surprisingly, other came in third. Preston fans, big old zero. You can always check out all these polls and make sure to follow us on social media, specifically on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Search us at Flag Down Pod. Matt, what's your closing thought for tonight?
Get my fucking basement floors done.
All right. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on Yahoo or YouTube Music now. We're now up there. Cool stuff happening at YouTube. I don't know if you can give us a rating on there, but if you can, please do. All right. Well, boys, undefeated in 2024. Call up Armando Broya. He's not up to Chelsea's level, so he can go ahead and finish Matt's floor. Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
That was perfect.